From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 27th day of January, 2025. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. Chad Hart from Iowa State University Extension will join us to discuss last night's events between the U.S. and Colombia and what impact that might have on the marketplace over time. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org, celebrating 40 years, 10,000 episodes, and some 30,000 interviews.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.82 a bushel, 4.5 cents lower. The May at $4.92 and a quarter, down 4.25. In December at $4.58 and a quarter, 2.75 lower. March soybeans, $10.45, down 10.75. The May at $10.58 and a half, 9.75 lower. And November new crop at $10.43 and a quarter, down 5.5 cents. Bean meal, $4.10 lower. The bean oil down 22 cents. Soft red winter wheat in the March at 535 and a half, off 8.5 cents. The hard red at 553 and a quarter, down 6.25 cents. Live cattle futures were up 80 cents at 203.82 and a half, and the lean hogs at 89.87 and a half, $1.67 and a half higher on this Monday. Kurt Kimmel from AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Interesting overnight trade into the day trade. Tell me about what you saw, Kurt.
Yeah, just basically a pickup in volatility, uncertainty, what can happen when the market's closed over the weekend, particularly with Colombia. Everybody is probably aware now that moving immigrants back home and to Colombia there, and initially they were would not allow those transport planes to land, and so Trump kind of echoed or told them that, okay, we're going to impose tariffs, and the Colombian president came back and did a counter, and before you knew it, all of a sudden everything's cool. All of a sudden, I'm not quite for sure if the cartel in Colombia said got involved, maybe, but who knows what took place in the back scenes. And these are where I'm going with this is these are scenes or events that we cannot control. We don't know. And I think we're going to see more and more of that here as we move forward. So it increases volatility. It sets the stage of managing risk because we just don't know what's going to blow up when and where. But the significance of the Colombian thing, if it would follow through, was Colombia has become a good trading partner. They're number three corn, bean, and soybean buyer. They're number four with ethanol, and they buy some pork from us. They're about number seven. And that varies from year to year, but last thing we want to do is lose some export business here, and that would upset the balance sheet. That coupled with a better forecast for the southern hemisphere. We're seeing the drier areas receive. The northern regions actually need to dry out. They've been a little bit wet. On the southern hemisphere, I think they're projected to be about 4% complete of harvest. I've not heard any yields for say or whether it's up to expectations or not, but we're starting to enter that stage of harvest in some of the areas, whereas Argentina still has a little ways to go. The other thing is the Lunar New Year holiday starts here January 29th. That's the Chinese New Year. It's the year of the snake. And that's going to run for about 16 days till about February 12th. In the past, export news has been kind of quiet during that holiday. But with today's atmosphere, we don't expect a whole lot of news, but you just never know. So the Chinese are sort of on the sidelines. Coming into midday, totals were 3,400 beans being sold by the funds, 5,900 contracts of corn, 3,800 contracts of wheat. They were sellers, about 2,900 contracts of bean oil, and about 3,200 contracts a meal going into about that 11 o'clock hour. Export inspections, corn shipments were fairly good. The trade was looking for 1 to 1.4 million metric tons. It came in 1.247. Beans shipments were a little slow. They looked for 800,000 tons to 1.2. It came in 729. And the wheat shipments, they were looking for about 250 to 450, and it came in at 485, just a little above trade expectations on shipments. We're still early in the marketing year, so the key is to mainly watch the sales, make sure they stay strong here as we move forward. These shipments will kind of fall in place as we move forward here, Todd.
Did the volatility from last night, and I guess I will call the volatility out of the Oval Office as opposed to in the marketplace, cause AgMarket.net to reevaluate anything as it's related to that volatility and how it expects producers to help to manage it?
Yeah, we'll have our fundamental meeting here this afternoon, Monday afternoon here. We'll kind of review what's taking place. But yeah, it's going to turn up a notch or two to have some covered positions on so you have some staying power in the marketplace. The last thing you want to do is have a hedge on and get spooked out of it. So the key is to be able to have that staying power. You know, another thing too is overnight too, we saw this AI talk with the NASDAQ particularly sharply lower. There was, I believe, a Chinese company, they called it Deep Sneak. They developed some AI technology, and it took 2 months to get it up and going to develop it, and a low budget of $6 million. So it says there's going to be some competition out there, whether or not it's legitimate competition, whether that particular program takes off, we'll see here. But that really spooked investor confidence. And that's just another outside factor that's just going to say, we're going to be in a roller coaster mode in through here. And having a marketing plan and having staying power is going to be very, very important here as we go through the 2025 growing season.
Now, the point of that is that there is more competition with in the AI world, but more importantly, it was Chinese-based. And if I remember correctly, it is one of the most downloaded apps on both the Apple and the Android side as it's related to free AI interfaces. So interesting to watch, could have an impact on the marketplace. Thank you much. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
You bet, Todd. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. The United States Environmental Protection Agency is of concern to the American Farm Bureau Federation. Courtney Briggs is the Senior Director of Congressional Relations there. She says the topic of clean waters, specifically the waters of the U.S. rule, or WOTUS, is typically on the concern list. She notes it's become very challenging for farmers and producers as rules and regulations change from administration to administration, and believes Congress needs to do the hard work and open the Clean Water Act up to provide a clear definition of WOTUS in statute.
Unfortunately, that is a very difficult exercise, but both from a policy standpoint and a political standpoint. You still need 60 votes in the Senate. This is a very politically polarizing issue. So we need to see that bipartisanship and for folks to come together to support a rule that helps landowners, but respects the law, respects congressional intent, and respects the Sackett decision.
Briggs adds that the belief by some that farmers do not care about the environment couldn't be farther from the truth.
You can't grow anything, you can't raise anything without clean water and healthy soils. So our farmers live and work in the same communities. They are drinking the same water. So they have every motivation to keep our waters clean and our soils healthy.
Another issue Briggs says AFBF plans to address is PFAS. She says the Federation would like to see legal protections for farmers, but added that may be an issue that's delayed until later this year or into 2026, or perhaps even further down the road. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Later this week, we'll put registration information up for the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, on our home website. Be sure to put that in your calendar today. It's Tuesday, the 4th day of March. The theme music for our program today is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. We're now joined by Chad Hart, agricultural economist at Iowa State University. He's in Ames. Hi, thanks much for being with us on a Monday. We appreciate that, Chad.
It's my pleasure to be with you today.
We have a lot to talk about. Let's start with last night's events related to Colombia and the United States. Military jets were carrying sets of deportees into Colombia. The Colombians didn't allow them to land. The president of the United States said, wait a second, if that's going to be the case, we're going to put tariffs on. And it escalated from there and then de-escalated very quickly. What does it tell you about the marketplace? Because the tariffs, of course, while not directly related yet to what might happen to corn and soybeans, probably would have led to retaliatory tariffs being put in place by the Colombian president. In fact, I'm sure he said that, but he didn't detail what exactly. So tell me how you saw it all.
Well, that's the deal. I think what you saw here was that, one, when a country disagrees with whatever the U.S. is doing, the president is going to respond through tariffs. He sees this as an economic weapon or tool, depending on how you want to look at it, to get the U.S. point across. At the same time, too, you can see the markets are definitely fearful of what can happen there with the retaliatory tariffs. I mean, I would say the markets are still down today, even though we seem to be right where we started before this all happened. The markets are still a shaken by how quickly these tariffs can come in. And yeah, it's my understanding that Colombia basically responded by saying, if we get hit with 25% tariffs, we will respond with 25% tariffs. So they were basically saying, tit for tat, we're going to respond in kind. At the same time, too, this disagreement was basically not about moving those deportees. It was more in the manner in which they were moved. The idea of using military aircraft to do it, as opposed to, let's call it non-military civilian aircraft, I guess, or, something that, would be easier, I guess, to explain to, Colombians' national security, I guess, as far as looking at it as, if U.S. military aircraft are coming in, that sends a stronger message, and maybe not the message that needed to be communicated to Colombia. You see a lot of volatility building up in the marketplace because they recognize just how quickly the tariff pattern can change, not only from a U.S. perspective, but in the case of how quickly the retaliation might come back.
Yeah, so the Colombians had taken to be deportees prior to this, always on commercial airlines, so it was about the military planes being used. And I suppose they didn't ask if they could land until they were there.
And I think that's part of the issue here. I mean, it just wasn't communicated that there was going to be a change in the way this was going to happen. As you say, it's not that Colombia refused to take the deportees. No, they had been throughout the last administration, and by all sounds, it sounded like they were willing to take them this one as well. It was just, again, the manner in which they were being brought back to the country.
Yeah, and for agricultural purposes, Colombia's import of corn from the United States this year opposed to last year, in just a three-month period, this according to the U.S. Grains Council, from September to November 2023, and then in 2024, up 78%. But they're the third largest importer of U.S. corn.
Yes, they are. In fact, when I look at just so far this marketing year, you look at the export sales up to last week, they're up nearly another 40%. So they have been an incredible growth market for U.S. corn over the last couple of years, especially. A lot of this is built off the idea that the U.S. and Colombia signed a free trade agreement back about, I think, 12 years ago. And ever since then, we've been seeing Colombia sort of move up the rankings for us in terms of they becoming a more important trade partner with each and every year that passes.
What does last night's kerfuffle tell you about trade going forward?
It tells me that trade is being weaponized, for lack of a better term. The idea that it seems like we're going to see tariffs being utilized as that negotiating tool for all sorts of possible international disagreements here. You know, in this case, this was, you know, a disagreement about basically immigration and deportation, and not just, you know, it wasn't just about, you know, the policies themselves, but just how do we move people? And yet tariffs got caught up in the mix very quickly. We have seen President Trump discuss this in terms of concerns about the drug trade across international borders and things. So tariffs seem to be the preferred tool that President Trump wants to utilize in order to reinforce his point to other international leaders.
Yes, and he's been clear, now very clear, as it's related to trade. He also has been fairly clear as it's related to using tariffs to raise income for the federal government related to the external IRS proposal. I'm wondering what that means to you as it's related to marketing both the old and new crops.
Well, in this case, you know, you recognize that with the old crop, you know, in fact, if anything, we enjoyed a little bit of a bounce last week, arguably because of the delay with the tariffs. And that offered up some old crop marketing opportunities that I know a lot of farmers took advantage of. At the same time, too, as we're looking new crop, I mean, it does sort of beg the question now, do you try to put something in place before these tariffs hit to sort of price protect on the downside? Or do you take a long run approach and say, you know what, I'm going to have to wait some time, see how these tariffs develop, and hopefully they may not. Again, these tariffs seem to be mainly used as a negotiating tool so that maybe they will not come to pass and new crop, we can hold off for a while before trying to price protect.
So your bias depends.
Bias, you know, in this case, I'm leaning towards old crop. Yep, let's get it moving. New crop, I'm more willing to probably sit on my hands a little bit for a while and say, you know what? It's still early in the administration. It's still fairly early in the year. We tend to see our better prices late spring, early summer. I would still look to that window before wanting to make any major moves with new crop.
Thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Chad Hart is an agricultural economist. He's with Iowa State University Extension. Let's check in now with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics to see what the global growing regions look like and the climate in places like South America might be doing as it's related to the corn and soybean crops. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Begin in Argentina. Work your way northward.
Sure. In Argentina, following significant rains late last week and over the weekend, which helped to provide a boost in soil moisture, especially to the heart of the grain belt, we see more opportunities for rain coming up over the next several weeks, which will aid in crop stabilization. Latest computer model guidance is projecting additional rain systems moving through. There's some debate in the guidance, but kind of taking a step back and looking at the Argentina grain belt as a whole, if the latest model guidance verifies as projected, then rainfall would register near normal. Along with the additional rain activity, there will be a warmer temperature bias with some decent heat redeveloping over the upcoming weekend and the early part of next week. But if everything tracks as expected, then that heat would be followed up by a significant rain event to, again, provide some relief there.
Because where the crops are in their maturation stage, this is more than a just-in-time rain. This is a timely rain event, I take it?
Yes, for both corn and soybeans. Now, with corn going through really the heart of its yield-sensitive pollination stage, then heat is the most significant impact. And we had seen some significant or severe heat back, you know, a week and a half ago, which certainly impacted yield potential. With some heat coming up, there still is some risk of issues, but again, it's not to the extent of what occurred kind of prior to the better rains. Now, for soybeans still have a long ways to go, and with soybeans being more of a rainfall-sensitive crop at this stage of the season, yeah, these rains are exceptionally timely and will be improving the crop here, at least in terms of soil moisture for crop development as we go through these next several weeks.
For corn pollen, 93 degrees and above is kind of the critical area. The meaning above that is can be problematic. Were those previous temperatures well above that? And what do you see in the coming temperatures?
Yeah, with the previous heat wave, we did see multiple days, i.e. 7+ days of maximum afternoon temperatures climbing above 95 degrees Fahrenheit across a majority of the belt. Now, overnight minimum temperatures did cool down quite a bit rather than stay elevated. So that could be one kind of saving grace here with this past heat. And coming up here, at least the duration and the hours above 95 Fahrenheit on a day or during these multiple days here coming up, again, it doesn't look as long as what occurred back over a week ago.
In Mato Grosso, other parts of Brazil, are things still wet?
They're easing here. We've seen the pattern turn less active or easing back to something more seasonal for this time of year, and that looks to continue over the next couple of weeks. In fact, a few areas within Mato Grosso could receive only 70 to 75% of normal rainfall, which is still the heart of the rainy season, but that still is not enough to bog down any kind of early soybean harvesting or safrinha corn planting.
What are you watching here in the central part of the United States?
Yeah, we're watching the major Arctic air of last week retreat. And in fact, we've already begun to see temperatures climb back up to warmer than normal levels and basically look to stay that way throughout much of this week into the start of the following week. Right now, there's no sign of any extreme cold returning to the nation's midsection. There will be some cold air lurking in Western Canada, but right now, we're not seeing the signals or the triggers that would bring that cold, plunging down again into the central U.S.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org, where later this week you'll be able to register for our all-day Ag Outlook. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.